Okay, and let's just go back into silence for a second here. Good morning, Lord. It's so great to be with you again. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. That's Acts 2:44-46. So this morning I'm going to talk about, the title is Finding Church. So camp is a good place to cry, right? It's a pretty safe place. Healing tears, laughing tears, joy tears. Last night when we were singing It Is Well With My Soul, how many people were crying? I was, for sure. I'm a pretty regular happy crier. At marathons, I'm definitely not a runner. I actually really dislike running, but I enjoy seeing other people run. And in marathons, it's that endurance that they're going through, that pushing and achieving. And so I'm just like staying there on the side, like, go, yeah, you're doing well. And I'm like tears pouring down my eyes. Like, it's just such a beautiful moment for people encouraging each other. I realize also it's a moment where we kind of break down that barrier where you're not supposed to just say, like, good on you to, like, some random stranger. But in marathons, we stand there and cheer for one another. I was crying as we were welcomed into Menyamula Village in Malawi last night as they were singing around me. Which reminds me, I forgot to mention, I was so worked up with all the heat last night that I forgot to mention that my skirt that I was wearing, that green one, was the same as the cloth from the Menyamula Village Concept Cooperative, the Savings and Loans Group. They gave us cloth the first day, and then I said, I want this made into a skirt. And so when we get the power back, I have one more slide of the woman who tailored the skirt for me right that week and presented it to me. Also, my nails, if you haven't seen them, you'll have to come up and see them later. They're jamberries, which are like sticker nails, and we did a fundraiser for Spirit in Action. This is cloth from Malawi, this print, the blue eyes. But you made custom ones, so like I took the cloth and then put it onto this. So that was pretty cool. Okay, back. I just had forgotten that last night. So back to crying. The other thing that would regularly make me cry, music is bound to do it, but one of the, on the Berkeley campus where Boyd and I went to school, there was a sort of old hippie guy who just would sit around with a guitar and sing the old protest songs and Bob Dylan songs and Rolling Stones. He would just like be there, and it was sort of like people would sort of clump around him sitting on the, you know, sitting on the ground, and he would be there every day in the quad, and I would just walk past him and just tears would come because it was such a beautiful moment. His ministry was just being there to sing, and all these kids, you know, we were hearing the songs that our parents played, and we were just like, you know, reconnecting with that as we were away at college. So it was a beautiful moment. Recently, we went to the Documentary Film Festival in Toronto, and they had the same ads before all the shows. We went and saw 6 different documentaries. There was one ad for the Documentary Film Theater in Toronto, and every time I would see it, I would start crying. I mean, maybe it's like the equivalent of the long-distance phone commercials, which I'm not even sure they have anymore, but it was just like that moment of connecting. That Toronto is a space where we have enough of a community to have a documentary theater that plays documentaries all year just was like really touched me. So I would cry. Well, the words of Martin Luther King often make me cry. Boyd and I try to read some of the speeches as they come around in their annual cycle of remembering when they happened. And to read them out loud is just really, really touching. One of my favorites, how long? Not long, because no lie can live forever. How long? Not long, because the arc of moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. So these are just some moments of, for me, of this togetherness, this community, this building relationships, being in harmony together, moments that for me are examples of increasing the sum total of love and justice in the world, which, as I mentioned, was one of my meanings of life. So there are moments when that's being present right in front of me. And so another place where I've noticed myself crying on a regular basis over the last 5 years or so has been different churches. Church didn't always make me cry with that sort of joy overflowing, but I found that. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about today about my rediscovering that joy and tears, community and togetherness, and the relevance of church in my life. So when I was growing up, I had a very separate line between this is CFO, this is church.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, everyone say it with me. That's another CFO miracle. So I'll just continue in Grandma Barbara fashion until the power is resumed. So for me, when I was a kid, the church was kind of uninspiring, mostly about friendships, the youth group, there we go. And then the CFO was the place where the real stuff happened. It was where there was, you know, the prayer, the song, the love, the healing, meditation, that I have prayer on here twice. I think I did before and I didn't ever fix that. Reading the divine plan, that was some of the first stuff that really resonated with me. But I did, towards the end of high school, go to a church called the New Life Center Church, and it was also a group home for recovering addicts. So it was a place that I could see that realness that I was wanting in church. It was something that there were people who, when they prayed and they were praying for a change in their lives, they were seeing it, and there's real blessings happening in their life. And so for me, it was about seeing that
recovery could happen, that when they were singing songs about, you know, Jesus, make me new, that was real, that God could change their lives around. And there was also service involved. They often handed out meals after every service. And for me, that was, you know, maybe some of the first examples of giving back to others. It was this pay it forward. You know, I've been changed and healed by the caring of others, and I can do that for someone else too. But it never felt as real as camp, so when I went to college, I stopped going to church at all. In 2006, I went with my family to Teze, which is the community that Mike mentioned last night, and we sang some of those songs. As he said, it's an international community, ecumenical. There is light. It's known for its music, for those chanting repetitive songs, and for the spirit of building this international understanding and peace. So they open up their grounds every summer to especially youth, but people from all over the world. And so we were there for a week in I think it was July, right at the height of the season, with 4,500 youth and 500 adults from all over the world. And it was just an amazing explosion of joy. So the Teze schedule has three different prayer times with the repetitive song, with different psalms sung in between and different prayers. there's a small group time with international groups, so, you know, the one of the brothers would lead it, and then it would be translated into multiple languages as we were all sitting there. There were Bible readings with the brothers, really simple meals, tea time, of course, because it's in Europe, so you have to have multiple tea times throughout the day, and then a nighttime fellowship. So for me, this flow of the meditation, the repetitive songs, this community of people from around the world speaking all different languages. The songs were, some were in Latin, but some would be, you know, we'd sing one in Spanish, and then you sing one in Russian, and you sing one in Italian. And as each group's language came up, it would sort of be like the French would sing three times as loud, and it was in French, and then you hear all the English accents as people are trying to read it. And I'm sure I don't know any French at all, so I was sure I was butchering the language completely, but it just, there was beautiful harmony in those moments. And it was also a huge lesson in respecting other customs. You're there as guests to the brothers, so that meant that when they said you can't wear a bathing suit, even though it's like a bajillion degrees outside and there's a pool right there, you can't, you know, you have to respect that. You have to cover your shoulders in the chapel. And then it was also just this beautiful place of actually what is it like to live peacefully in the world with people from different cultures. So, you know, this was maybe one place at that time when Bosnians and Serbians were like hooking up at the nighttime fellowship. You know, I saw my first Cuban flag there. it was really great. The food system there was amazing too. So there are 5,000 people, very simple accommodations, simple bunks, more simple than here. And the food, they had to feed, you know, 5,000 people in just, you know, however long is scheduled, like 45 minutes or whatever. So what you do is there's sort of like a gauntlet of food, and there's these big vats of rice, like rice, potatoes, and, you know, just basically simple food. But you'd sort of, like, you'd wait forever in this sort of, like, the Spirit of God moving through the line. And then they hand you a tray, and the next person puts on a bowl, and the next person slops in the rice, and the next person, like, puts in some crab sticks, and then someone puts a cup, and someone pours the tea, and then you're just like, okay, and you go and find somewhere to eat. And you get a bowl of hot cocoa in the afternoons. Very nice. So it's a wonderful experience if you ever get to go. If you're ever in France, take a detour to Taizé, because it's just a place that is so heart-filling. I didn't take the official communion there, but they had little stations that had blessed bread. And I had written in my journal that I appreciated that. It wasn't anything else. It wasn't trying to be anything else. It's just like, this is blessed bread. It's been blessed. You can eat it. And for me, that was just like a simple communion with God that would give me that spirit, but it wasn't too difficult for me to think about cognitively. So after we moved to Minnesota, we moved to Minnesota right before we went to Taizé, or right after we moved to Taizé. We went to Taizé, then we moved to Minnesota. And I was looking then for a church that might help me meet new people in this new state. We were there for Boyd's PhD program. We knew we'd be there for a few years. And what I tried some different churches. What I ended up finding was the Quaker meeting. And in them, I found that those principles of peacemaking and openness that I was really wanting at that time. They also have a really great lobbying group for peace, the Friends Committee for National Legislation. If you've seen the signs that say, like, war is not the answer, that's that lobby group. And so for me, it was that example of working for both love and justice in the world. And it was also a silent listening prayer, so it was similar to what I knew from CFO. Listening for that still small voice, the be still and know I am God, I would sing that chant that Mike sang the other night, the be still and know I am God. God. In my head, though, so it sounded really nice. So this was a silent meeting, so that meant it was silent until someone felt the inner calling to say something. And the way that they talk about it in the Quaker Church is that when it rises to the level of verbal ministry, so there's ministry all the time going in within us in that silent time, but when it rises to the level of verbal ministry, you feel this urge, this need to stand up and share it with the group. And then the message might not be for you, so a message might be for someone else in the group. It might not resonate. The first meeting that I went to, they call this worship service a meeting. It was silent for the entire time. No one had any verbal ministry, so I sat there for an entire hour going like, what's going on? And other times the messages were just very simple, and I did once feel that call for verbal ministry, and it was just so clear when it was happening. It was a vibration throughout my body, and I said, okay, I got to stand up and share. I can't remember what it was, but it was very clear to me when it was that calling. The church also works through consensus and about, you know, it's about listening prayer. So again, it was something that felt very comfortable to me, made a lot of sense for that peace building in the world. And it was very important at that time in our lives because I was working two jobs, going to a master's program. Boyd was working on his dissertation. So there was not a lot of like silent, open time in our lives, a lot of time for that quiet reflection. So after a few years in Minnesota, we moved to New Haven for a year. And that was, of course, like a month before David moved away. So we never got to overlap in New Haven. But we moved in right across from the Yale Divinity School. My window from where I sat at my desk, I was working at home again there, looked directly to the Marquand Chapel. It's just a beautiful chapel building. Green lawns, you know, all the ivy-covered things that we never had in California. So it was just beautiful. And, you know, I started thinking, huh, that's pretty close. And for me, I don't know about you, but if things are close, then I'll go to them. Like, I have to have my yoga studio within less than 10-minute walk, otherwise I'll never go. I have to have my church within close distance, otherwise it's too easy to say, well, So I knew that this was literally across the street. I was like, I better try it out. This is a sign. And I found that they didn't have a Sunday service. And I was like, huh, that's strange. You assume that Divinity School might have a Sunday service. Well, it turned out they have a daily service, 10 to 10:30 weekdays, for the students. But they also welcomed it to anyone who wanted to go. The service was a variety of denominations and practices. And because the students there were from many different backgrounds, so there were Quaker services, there were praise music services, there were Presbyterian Methodist services, there were, I even went to an Eastern Orthodox unsanctioned service. So that was a pretty amazing experience to get all those different experiences. And it was just the most inspired preaching and students I had ever seen. Everyone was so passionate to be there. It was one of the places where they were really practicing that faith that they were learning throughout the week. And again, it was right there. So I would set my timer to 10:20, and when it would go off, I'd be like, okay, got to wrap up that email, got to run over to the chapel. For me, it was just that pure stuff. It was just the pure worship service. The music was beyond amazing. I think I cried every single day in that church for the entire year that we were there. The soaring sopranos, the organ, there was a gospel choir that was beyond just amazing. It was so inspiring. And Boyd was busy that year with his work, but I did drag him to one of the services, And he was bawling within like 20 seconds. So for me, it was also, I was in no way in charge. At that point, I had been to a lot of CFO camps and had been doing different leadership and been on different counselings. So I was always kind of like trying to pay attention to what was going on. These services, I had nothing to do with the community. I didn't even need to, if they skipped something on the service, I was not even paying attention to that. So again, it was another way to sort of release all the stuff that was getting me caught up around church and just experience the music and the words and the worship. This is where I first started developing that real understanding and the intimacy in communion. There was one day when we got to give communion to each other. So not only did we pass the tray and, you know, take our little cup, but we actually said to the person next to us, you know, this is the body of Christ given for you, looking at the person. And then they would say it to the person next to them. And that moment for me, again, knowing that I could have that intimacy with God, that I could give that blessing to someone else, whatever was that moment, it was so, so precious. And the woman who I had given the blessing in the communion to, just, we both teared up and were holding hands, clutching hands the entire rest of the service. I don't even know her name, but it was so, so precious to be able to give that blessing and receive that blessing. For me also, receiving the elements with the community was a way of joining them and noticing that, again, that intimacy with that whoever was leading that week could have with God and with that part of the service. Also importantly, in New Haven, I found that the church was one of the few places where they are really talking about social justice, that they were being active within the whole community, not just the Yale community. They were really involved. They had, staycation spring breaks for the few students that weren't flying off to Cabo or wherever, St. Bart's. They had service weeks led by the university church, actually, at Yale. And for me, just seeing that justice work was really, really important and inspiring. So I was all fired up, and then we moved back to Minnesota, and I was like, okay, we got to find a new church. I got to keep doing this. And luckily, we had some friends there that we knew from before, and they invited us to their church, St. Anthony Park UCC Church. And for me, again, it was finding the relevancy of needing this community, needing these friendships, because we were only going to be in Minnesota a year. We didn't know where we were going after that, but we knew that it would only be a year. And so it's sort of like this transitory period where I was like, I need some grounding between what's happening. So the pastor is amazing. She gave great sermons every week where I just, would want to think and talk about it. We had a group of friends, so we'd all go out to lunch afterwards. And it was also, I think, one of the first places where I felt that that the community was really proud to stand up for the liberal Christian movement. And that felt, I really needed that. So that was really important for me. It felt like it was Christianity without apology and also open and affirming and loving. And so there, it was my first experiences in sort of the more traditional Christian learning of, I went through Holy Week. I'd never done all those experiences before at my Ash Wednesday service. I was even baptized for the first time, just because it felt like such a welcoming community. So soon then we moved, after Minnesota a year, we moved to Toronto. And so I just said, okay, they don't have, UCC is American denomination, the UCC in Canada, is slightly different, so it wasn't as easy to like go, oh, I'm just going to find the same thing where I am. And of course, no churches, even within the denomination, are the same anywhere. So I was like, okay, I got to just try everything out. So I went to different churches, and what I was looking for was really, I wanted vitality, I wanted yearning, I wanted that sort of passion that was a minimum standard after having been to the Yale Divinity School. Like, it was a pretty high bar, but I was going to keep looking for that. So I tried out different ones, and then one day on my streetcar ride, I saw the Unitarian Universalist Church. And I said, I'll give it a try. So I went in, and first of all, the music was just amazing. They have a beautiful choir. The pianist is just flows. And then there was also just messages of love, peace, and grace that were just felt so touching to me at that time. A lot of my spiritual path is about being a seeker, trying to always figure out new things, relearn things. And so it felt like it was really a community that was also curious and seeking. So I liked that. There are some things that they do really well that as a community really drew me in. Part of that is really being grateful to their volunteers, always thanking people, making sure people are appreciated for what they're doing, which is important when you rely so much on that. You don't want your volunteers to get worn out. It's a beautiful song for the children, and it just felt like such a blessing for those children there. I'll sing it. As you go, may joy surround you. As you go, go in peace. Know our love is with you always. As you go, as you go. And just felt like, wow, this is a community that's really supporting those children, really, really loving them. Also in their, I do fundraising for my work, maybe you figured that out, but so I'm always really anxious when I am gearing up for a new offering, when they say the words before the offering, and I'm really critical of like, I want them to give a good kind of good ask for this. And I was at another church, and it was sort of like they had forgotten that in the service, and the pastor's like, oh gosh, sorry. Well, let's just do the offering right now. I'm like, oh gosh, whatever. I'll give my dollar that I give when I go to any church service. But that was not just, it didn't show at all that this is important for the church. We need this offering. And so when I heard the offering at First UU, I just was blown away. So close your eyes. Imagine you're in church, you hear that it's time for the collection plate, and then someone gets up and says, "We say in our church that the offering is a sacrament of the free church. What we mean by that is that we believe it is a blessing to be able to govern and support our religious community ourselves, to make possible by our generosity everything we dream of and do to live out our shared values. Every week, we lift up the spiritual value of generosity by taking an offering for the ministries of this church. Our plate, then, as it is passed among us, becomes filled with the evidence of that generosity. It is our harvest gathered in every week from what most nourishes us. The ushers will now come among you to receive the gifts of the congregation. The morning offering will be most gratefully received." And I'm like, point, how much money do we have? For me, that is just so open-hearted. That's just that pure, both the expression of we are community, this is what supports us, and this is a blessing for you to be able to give, to show your generosity by giving. And so I always end up giving more than I intend to. So in that church, it's a way for me to learn to live intentionally, way to act on my faith. They do a lot of things in the committees that I like around consensus, about clearing, about giving space for everyone to talk. Part of the not creed that I mentioned last night, the first part is love is our doctrine. That's all there is. Love is our doctrine. The quest for truth is our sacrament. We're seekers and learners. And spirit and service is our prayer. So again, that works in with my work with Spirit in Action. And then I supplement, because there is a UU Christians ministry, so I often read what they're putting out. I teach others about Christianity when I'm at the church, and I feel like I'm sort of can be a good ambassador for what loving Christians can be like, because so many people have been hurt by the church. I feel like I try to be the opposite of what they expect and then become a blessing that way. And they do have a quarterly communion, so I get my little bits that way, the harvest communion and the water communion, where we all bring a little vial of water, pour it all in together, and that then becomes, they take a little bit out of that and save it for next year. So we come from our varied experiences, combine that sacred water, and then have that throughout the year. So now I go to church, but I'm not religious about it. So in all these experiences, it was for me noticing that when I was crying, that was moments of pure community. That was a way to know that I was living out my faith, to practicing that joy and justice in my life. And so I've come to appreciate that time to connect every week. The monks of New Skeet, which is somewhere around here, right, in New York, I think, relate worship to a social movement and personal spirituality to a lone advocate. So when we're worshiping together, we're becoming a social movement, and it has that benefit of the moral support, the louder voice, the power and the sense of belonging to something that we don't get when we're just worshiping on our own. And there, in that social movement, we can come to understand and develop ourselves in ways that we can't do on our own. In that, relating to people who we like and don't like in church, we come to know ourselves better and can build that harmony with anyone. And I have a new idea that I'm still developing. I talked this over with Dana a little bit. I'm trying to see if, like, church can be the new brunch. I'm not just talking about, like, let's have a cool church, but I'm saying, like, you know, people my age, we're all going to brunch on Sunday morning. It's like the thing to do. You go and you spend a few hours, and before you know it, it's like, well, we've just kind of been here all day because we're having such a good time together. And so I'm trying to see, like, can church be kind of retro in its appointment timing? Like, you have to be there on Sunday. It's kind of like watching TV on, like, regular TV instead of Netflix. I'm not sure. I'm still, like, developing it. So, like, if you have ideas about, like, how it can be, like, hipster brunch to, like, go to church, then I want to hear it. So because church is all about that togetherness and that community, that harmony that I mentioned, it tends to make me cry. And so I think that that's a good thing for my soul. So I keep going. When I don't let the labels scare me away, and I just went searching with an open heart, you can see I found many different things that fill that soul, that longing. And I was led to many different communities that embraced me, forced me to grow and learn, and brought tears of love and comforted me when I had tears of sadness, of pain. So if you haven't found a church that makes you cry, I encourage you to keep looking. And look all over, because you never know where it might be, where that avenue for tears, that community, that love. I just have one more story that I heard at the Gale Chapel. Boyd's already crying because he knows the story. A Presbyterian pastor from one of, I think it was inner city Philadelphia. He told a story about his church. There was a young couple there that wanted to get married, have the wedding in the church. And they said, we're just going to do it on a Sunday morning. We're going to do it when everyone is already there. We'll bring our families, but the whole church community is invited. And actually, you know, since anyone's welcome in the church, everyone is sort of welcome to our wedding. And so it was, you know, simple ceremony right after the service. Everyone was welcome. There was a group lunch that the church usually has. That was the service. You know, probably chicken and coleslaw. The woman, the bride, was a emergency room nurse. And a few weeks later, she was there and was called in by a frantic other nurse saying, like, there's this guy, we can't calm him down, we can't figure out what's going on, we need you to come in and help us sort of get him stable, get him okay. And he's raving in the bed, he's just clearly agitated, doesn't know what's going on, in pain, and she walks into the room, and he looks at her, and he sort of gives a look. And she comes over to him and holds his hand, and he looks at her and said, I was at your wedding. I was there. I wasn't allowed to go to my daughter's wedding, but you invited me. And when we can open our hearts, and our community can be so welcoming that we welcome even those unwelcome, then that's what church is all about. And so I praise God that there are those churches and that we are building that community and that we can all come together and hold those, that sacredness in common. Dear Lord, we give you our hearts so that you can open them wider than we can on our own, so that we can build community even when we don't want to, so that your peace and harmony fill every corner of the globe, and that we are strong in that love. Amen.